welcome to Pocket Docs, short documentaries, monologues, and musings. I'm Natalie Kestacher, and today, stories of memory and connection. In 2015, the Hearsay International Audio Festival in Ireland chose as its winner Sophie Townsend's very personal piece about love, loss, and a very special handyman. Here's Sophie and her daughter Anna with Mr. Fix-It.
I'm sticking with you, 'cause I'm made out of glue. Anything that you might do, I'm gonna do too.
I found this picture the other day that you'd drawn, and you'd drawn it when you were about four at childcare. And because kids at childcare, you know, they draw pretty badly. Even though that's a delightful picture, let me say, the teachers would actually find out what you'd actually drawn and write a little story underneath.
Yeah.
Okay. So why don't you just read what they had written, what you told them that this was a picture of?
Daddy likes to fix things and Mummy likes to cry on the couch.
And then this was for Parents' Day.
Yeah.
So they hung all of them up around the childcare centre. And so everybody who came in saw that Anna had drawn a picture that said, do you want to read it again?
Daddy likes to fix things and Mummy likes to cry on the couch.
Yeah. So that was kind of humiliating.
Sorry. He didn't actually fix a lot of things. You know what I mean? He fixed lights. He fixed the fire alarm. You fixed the fire alarm.
That's right. That's right. I did, didn't
yeah,
I?
Yeah. Knocking it down isn't really fixing it, but same thing.
I fixed the noise coming from
yeah.
the fire alarm.
Yeah.
You know when you wear his shirt?
Mm. Yeah.
You look so much like him.
I like that shirt. I think he fixed things in that shirt. Da 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 da.
Do you remember that time? It was your birthday.
My ninth. We went to a cafe. We rang Dad with me. But he wasn't really there. He was in an orange little box, and it had flowers on it. And his ashes were in there. So he was on a chair, like the box of ashes were on a chair and his box was on a chair, and the waiters weren't 100% sure what was happening or what to do. I really wanted him to stay for my ninth birthday, because just before he died, I said, Dada, can you please stay for my ninth birthday? I'm sticking with you, 'cause I'm made out of glue. I don't get how one person can just be here for a day and then just being gone for the rest of your life. Anything that you might do, I'm gonna do too.
I think he fixed more than broken things. Just him being here has kind of kept everything in place.
Yeah, I do too.
That was Mr. Fix-It. The producer was Sophie Townsend and the sound engineer was Martin Peralta. This is the Pocket Docs podcast with stories about memory and connection. In our next story, a playful interlude between six-year-olds ends in a nasty break. Here's Blue by Gary Bryson.
Mary Ann's blue dress was a different shade entirely from the blue of the sky. But they seemed to belong together, she and the firmament. Each as close and each as far away. Every time our noses touched, we giggled. We were swinging on one of the gates in my parents' driveway. Backwards and forwards and back. The old gate squealing on its hinges as it described an arc from the driveway and all the way out over the pavement of the street. Mary Ann was standing up on one side of the gate, and I was on the other side facing her, making it swing. I used my foot against the ground to push us one way, my hand against the wooden fence to push us back. We were 6 years old. When we're big, I said, laughing, we'll get married. Yes, she said, and our noses touched again. The blue of her dress was like a promise, and I wondered then if I should tell her that I loved her. We'll live in a big house, she said, with our own telly, and a dog and a cat. Yes, I said, and a red car. And lots of babies, she said. Hang on tight. I kicked hard against the pavement and followed her smile as we curved into the driveway, my hand out ready to push us back. When my finger broke, there was no noise, but I felt it snap. The gate stopped swinging. Its motion dissipated in a quick exchange of energy which left it vibrating. Everything else was sudden and still. I looked for Mary Ann. She was standing in the street, a million miles away, her head tilted to one side, watching. The angle she made against the sky wasn't right, as though she was about to leap into space and zoom off back to her own planet. I realized then that I was lying on the ground. When I looked at my finger, the third on my right hand, it was swollen and already turning blue. A different blue from the blue of the sky and the blue of Mary Ann's dress. A dark, inky blue, almost black. It was starting to hurt with a pulsing kind of pain, sharp and annoying, like an unwanted third person joining the game. I had to bite my tongue, but I didn't cry. Not really. Is it broken? Mary Ann was pointing at my hand. It's all right, I said. Come on, let's keep playing. I clambered back onto the gate, wincing with the pain, and waited for her. She shook her head. My dad says it's stupid to swing on gates. Anyway, I bet your finger is broken. No, it isn't. You'd better tell your mum about it. Tell her it was your own fault. Come on, I said. Let's play. But she walked off. I watched her as she stopped at the curb and looked carefully both ways and then to the right again before crossing the street. My finger was throbbing badly now, and it seemed then that maybe it was all my fault, that there was no one else to blame, that I deserved everything. A broken finger, the embarrassment of tears, loneliness. I kicked the gate. I'm not going to marry you then, I shouted. But she was already gone. Blue. I never told anyone that my finger was broken. I pretended it didn't hurt much, and Mum was happy to be spared the bother of taking me to the doctors. She put a bandage on it and some ointment that she kept in the cupboard. Later, when the finger began to bend sideways at the first joint, Dad said I should see the doctor. that I'd broken it, and it was mending crookedly. He said the doctor would break it again and set it straight. I refused to go, and that was that. In time, the crooked finger became for me a kind of companion, dependable and constant, like the blue of the sky.
Blue was written and produced by Gary Bryson, and the sound engineer was Stephen Tilley. Every year, producers of the Pocket Docs competition ask our listeners to send us their true stories. Some make us smile and some make us ache for the people who tell those stories. My Irish Mate by Julia Bianco falls into that last category. It's a tale of grief and friendship that helps to answer the question of how we respond to devastating loss.
It was the 25th of January, 2011, a day I will never forget. I was sitting on the platform, in shock. The stranger rushed past me and said he would come back, but I don't remember him nor his words. He only told me weeks later. I finally met the stranger when a former colleague contacted me and asked if I could see him. He wanted to apologise for not coming back to me, she said. He wasn't coping very well. I agreed and thought that I could somehow help. There were many who had been affected by the accident. He was one of the paramedics, she said, the first on the scene. We met at a coffee shop on a bright sunny day. I didn't remember him, nor his words about coming back at the station, but it was obviously very important to him. He felt he had let me down. He was sorry. And then the revelation. The world stopped, jolted, realigned, and started spinning again ever so slowly. This man, this stranger, from one moment to the next, became an integral part of my life, forever linked, forever there for each other. More than 4 years later, we are closer than ever. Our worlds collided and now run parallel, synchronized, never to be strangers again. Mick told me how he wanted to come back to the platform on that fateful day in January. To support me, to be with me. But he had to stay down on the tracks. He was the only person there, and he could not leave my daughter. He had to protect her, to hold her hand, to talk to her, even though her spirit had left this world. He had to stay, he told me, and that's why he didn't come back up to me. He was sorry. We both cried. Tears rolled down our faces as we clutched each other's hands across the table. We were in our own world, oblivious to the bizarre scene that was playing out to others around us in the cafe. This stranger, this new brother, uncle, father, friend, was the last person to be with Yasmina, my 9.5-year-old daughter, my only child. He would now be in my life forever. I pulled out photos of her, a living, breathing, young person, a person he would never know but would forever love, a person who would bring his long career as a paramedic to a crashing halt. A person who would trigger his long battle with post-traumatic stress. We met often after that first day. We talked and talked, mostly about Yasmina, even though he hardly knew her. It helped me. It helped him. He visited her grave and put a shamrock on the plaque. He met her dad, my husband. And slowly, together, we began to talk of other parts of our lives. His Irish past, my travels, the problems of the world. And soon we began to laugh together, to share silly jokes, to see the lighter side of life, to begin to experience the joy in this world. The darkness is still there. The stranger and I know it. The post-traumatic stress hits both of us in waves. The depression, the anxiety, the blues. But we pick up the phone, meet for a coffee, talk, and help each other, navigating our way through that black hole in our lives. My daughter, the person he never really knew. The stranger, Mick, my Irish mate with the leprechaun in his pocket.
My Irish Mate was written and read by Julia Bianco, and it was produced by Lee Redfern and Dominica Roebuck. The sound engineer was Martin Peralta. And you'll find a link to the written version on our website. This is the Pocket Docs podcast, and I'm Natalie Kesticher. When the two people in our next story met, the attraction was undeniable. Undeniable, but not necessarily similar in nature.
No, I thought that was it. I thought you was mine. I did. I didn't know. I didn't even care whether you was married or not. I didn't, because I didn't know whether you was married or not. And I'm looking at you and thinking, when I walk out that door, that woman's going to be walking with me till the end of my days. And I still love you. I can't help it. What am I supposed to do?
What do you say to an 80-something-year-old man who confesses his love for you? I know I was afraid of breaking his already frail heart. As we sat next to each other on his sofa in his lounge room that afternoon,
we were both standing.
We talked about how we first met.
In the CWA shop.
Yes.
In a cake shop in the city.
Facing the the cake.
Yes, that's right.
The cabinet where they had put all the cakes. Yeah. And did you walk in after I was there, or?
You was in there when I went in there. I think I saw you straight away.
Yeah, I also noticed John. As soon as I saw him, a gentle-looking man, dressed as though he'd just emerged from the 1930s or something, with piercing blue eyes peering out from his black felt hat.
Because I expected something to happen.
He reminded me of a friend I'd lost years ago, alone after his wife died. I felt drawn to John, just as I had been to Richard.
Oh, you had that feeling.
There he is.
Something was going to happen.
And I thought, that's it. When I spotted you and I got my eyes on you, you know, that was it. And I've loved you ever since.
We talked inside the shop, standing beside a table of knitted clothes for sale. That's where he told me that his wife was wearing a knitted orange beret when they first met. Then we stood on the street, outside, and he started to recite poetry.
A cerulean blue awning, open wide from every side, the doorways of the dawning. it can be seen that spring has been, the bleating of the lamb.
It was easy to be mesmerised by John. He was charming, that's for sure.
Yeah? Mm. I can't think of that verse before. A day like this is one of bliss.
But still,
the children with their toys,
I didn't feel what he felt.
The sweet romance in every glance between the girls and boys.
And that made it difficult
at every bend
to hear what he had to say and not be able to say what he wanted me to say.
A merge sublime and love is sacrosanct.
Your question of, was I in love with you at first sight?
I think you were. I think you're feeling something like that.
I was feeling something, but I wouldn't say that it was a feeling of... I know it wasn't the feeling of being in love. It wasn't, for me, it wasn't that.
You can fall in love.
Yeah.
It's a sight, it's a glimpse.
Yeah, I know that, but it wasn't, for me, it was about, I don't know. It was a feeling of, I want to talk to this person. I want to know what he has to say.
Yeah.
Perhaps,
let me put it this way. If you would have had no one else, I'd have had you, wouldn't I? Now, wouldn't I? You'd have been mine. Well, wouldn't you? If you weren't married, I would have had you. I knew I would.
Well, I can't.
You'd been mine. You'd been my girl. The memory of your presence here is like the fragrance left behind when roses have been taken from a room. Roses. I've lost a word. What's the name? Roses of the damask kind. Because the damask rose.
It's almost impossible to tell John that even if I wasn't married, I would have been swept off my feet by him. A man 40 years older than me. And become his lover.
Do you love me? I do?
Because I'm in love with someone else.
Yeah, I know. Oh, yeah. Now, if you've got a good bloke, if you've got someone good, and you've got a daughter, I couldn't take your talk out of that, no matter how much I loved you. God, but I love you. I do. It's terrible. How wonderful it is to be beguiled by everything that's beautiful. And wild. It's you.
That was The Memory of Your Presence Here by Helene Thomas. That's it for Pocket Docs today. I hope you've enjoyed it and you'll join me next week for more short documentaries, monologues and musings. Studio production was by Jessica Binneth and Stephen Tilley. I'm Natalie Kestacher.